Joining us now from YahooSports.com, one of the finest NFL writers in the country, a great friend, Jason Cole. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be here. What's going on, Vic?
Well, we got some wild card games to talk about, some coaching openings throughout the league to talk about, including the one here. Let's get to those wild card games first. Saturday, Bengals at Texans, Vikings at Packers. I want to talk first about that Bengals-Texans game. And the Bengals, I mean, really a contrast here. Two teams, the Bengals looking like one of the hotter teams toward the end of the season, and the Texans pretty much ice cold going into this thing. Does that have any effect, you think, on the outcome?
Well, I absolutely think it's going to have something to do with it, because I don't think that Houston's problems are necessarily fixable easily, because I think that they're so banged up in the secondary and so confused back there that I think that it's hard to flip the switch, because this has not been like just three or four games where they played poorly back there. It's six, seven games. This dates to that game against Jacksonville before Thanksgiving where they played really horribly, had to go to overtime to beat Jacksonville, then got lit up and, you know, on Thursday in that Thanksgiving Day game at Detroit. And then it's gotten a little bit better since those back-to-back games, that they managed to squeak out and win, but it hasn't gotten a lot better. The other problem we have is that in every big game this season, Matt Schaub has come up short.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, it's not just one game or two games or, you know, having a little bit of a slump. He has played really mediocre in big games, and so those are two big problems. That's still going to be a tough one for Cincinnati going on the road, but they've been in this environment before, and I think that A.J. Green and Andy Dalton have progressed to the point where they're going to be able to take advantage of that Houston secondary, unlike last year where they just had no chance to take advantage of them because Houston's defense was playing so well.
Can they get – I mean, I think the Bengals' O-line has done a pretty good job, right, protecting Andy Dalton. But we're still talking about, as bad as that secondary might be for the Texans, they can still generate some heat. J.J. Watt is still one of the very best players, not just on defense in the league, but period. And I'm thinking that the pressure that he might be able to bring and that Wade Phillips might be able to bring with those blitz packages could possibly offset what's lacking in that secondary or not.
I think that you are on to something there. I think that it's possible for that to happen, and that's why you, in the back of my mind, I'm still viewing this as an upset for the Bengals to win it. I don't think that they're definitively better because of the presence of all the talent you're talking about. J.J. Watt, Connor Barwin, Brooks Reed, who's been banged up here in the second half of the season. They're finally getting him back and healthy. He's a better run guy than a pass rusher, but still a pretty good pass rusher. So you get all those guys on the field together, and you think that maybe Houston can make it work. But I just not, you know, you just don't feel confident because everything is so predicated on being good in the secondary. Now, maybe because, you know, the referees swallow the whistles a little bit more on contact and fouls in the secondary in the postseason, that makes you think maybe Houston can make up for it a little bit. But like A.J. Green is a huge difference maker, and I don't think that it's easy to stop him. So I still think that Cincinnati is going to get some big plays. It really comes down to, can you get some pass rush, and can Houston's offense with Arian Foster and Andre Johnson really leading the way generate enough to get into the high 20s? Because I think the Bengals will have a hard time getting into the high 20s on the road. Maybe 24 points, maybe, you know, as high as 27, but you get much beyond that, I think it becomes a struggle for the Bengals to keep pace in this game.
Yeah, I would go along with that. And Andy Dalton's got to be careful what he's had four pick sixes this season. So that's something to look at when he's pretty efficient, but I think when he makes mistakes, they tend to be big ones. And I like what you said about Arian Foster running behind that zone blocking line. And as good as the Robert Gathers, as good as a pass rush as the Bengals are able to generate, I think those cutback lanes can be problematic for them. Flipping over to the NFC game on Saturday, Vikings at Packers, and these teams just met a week ago, and all that Green Bay has continued to prove is they have no prayer of stopping Adrian Peterson.
That's a pretty that's pretty easy analysis of it. I mean,
Thanks. I really went out on a limb on that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, 409 yards in two games.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of deep thinking that you and I come up with. That's why football listeners go to us first.
How about this stat? 7.4 yards per touch against the Packers for Adrian Peterson when you factor in the catches, too.
Yeah, and I think they're probably all shorter than the runs.
Right.
It's amazing what he's done against them. But at the end of the day, when you have Aaron Rodgers on the other side, what does it matter? It's like you can run wild all you want. In the game where you got 210 yards, they lost by 9 points.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if Aaron Rodgers is on, and let's look at this other game. I was at that Minnesota-Green Bay game. And as well as Minnesota played, that's about as great as they can play because they got the best game ever that Christian Ponder's had.
Right.
And they came up with three huge plays in the second half, had the highest quarterback rating that he's ever had in his life. You know, all these things went right for the Vikings in that game. And for Green Bay, as great as Aaron Rodgers played, they had four critical penalties that, you know, two of those, you know, hurt them on drives where they scored no points. They had they burned two timeouts inside the Minnesota 10-yard line in the first half. They failed to corral an obvious interception, you know, on that tip ball in the first half that went from being an interception to being a really fluky catch to then becoming a touchdown for the Vikings at the end of the first half. All those things conspired to say everything went wrong for the Packers pretty much as it could.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not even talking about the fact that Rodgers wasn't on page with, you know, Jordy Nelson as well as he should be. All those things went wrong for the Packers, and they still only lost by 3 points against a Vikings team that played as well as it possibly could at home. I mean, you put that all together, Peterson's going to go up to Green Bay, and he's going to get a lot of yards. But I just don't see the Vikings winning this game. I just think this is, to me, as interesting as this game is in a lot of sort of big national, you know, obvious ways,
right,
I think it's a pretty lopsided game when we come down to the end.
Yeah, I just can, it's hard for me to see when you've got a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, and who has been arguably hotter than anyone in the second half of the season, and he's already good if he's not hot. I mean, even the average Rodgers is better than most quarterbacks, but you got that versus a team that basically, and yes, Christian Ponder has played some of his better football the last couple of games, but he's got that elbow injury, and he's you know, nowhere close to the category, I don't think, that Rodgers would be, that you've got to depend on Peterson and depend on those big yards. But I think when you're leaning heavily on the run and the other team can have that quick strike ability, that's an edge. I mean, that's just got to work to their advantage.
Yeah, I think that Green Bay, you know, just has a really tough time. But, you know, you can play keep away for a while, but you can't play keep away forever against the Packers. Unless they, you know, have a game like they did last year against the Giants and their first playoff game. But I don't think they're going to, you know, this is not a team that has any time off like they did last year where they had a chance to get cold.
Right.
You know, Rodgers didn't play in the season ender last year, didn't play for 3 weeks, basically came back and was really, really off his rhythm. And now I think they're on top of their, you know, they're close to being on top of their game. They've still got some communication issues. You know, mm-hmm. Cobb didn't play this last week. Nelson, you know, ran some wrong routes. You know, he ran some breakoffs when Rodgers is expecting takeoffs a couple of times in that first half.
Sure.
But they'll get that stuff straightened out. And as long as that happens, you know, the Packers to me are the best team in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
If they get things rolling, I'm picking them to go to the Super Bowl.
Jason Cole joining us from YahooSports.com covers the NFL. We're talking wild card playoffs. The Sunday slate, Colts at Ravens, Seahawks at Redskins. The Colts at Ravens game, besides the game itself, there's so many interesting side stories, to say the least, starting with Chuck Pagano coming back from leukemia, back on the sidelines from that battle with leukemia to be back on the sidelines and coach that Colts team, which has obviously been well guided by Bruce Arians all the way through. Andrew Luck, the rookie quarterback who's vying to be the rookie offensive player of the year, probably a good shot at that, but he's got competition. And then the Ravens, the Ray Lewis story. Ray Lewis announcing yesterday that he's going to retire after this season. Was that, I don't know, something just tells me the timing of that was very convenient to maybe, is it serve as any kind of motivation or something for the Ravens?
Oh, you think?
Another astute observation.
Once again, Vic, we're getting back into that.
That stuff that you can only get right here.
Yeah, that kind of depth of analysis, yeah. You know what I look at this one is a picture like Chuck Pagano and Ray Lewis sitting down at a poker table. It's like the World Series of Poker. And Chuck Pagano has pushed in all of his chips on the emotional chips to ride on and as he plays out this hand. And then Ray Lewis comes back and says, oh, by the way, I'm ending my 17-year career as the face of a franchise. How's that sound for you, Chuck? It's fantastic. You know, I think that you're talking about two teams, that one that has definitely been riding emotion, a young team that has overcome the fact that it's got, a negative 17 turnover ratio. That's what the Colts have this year. And, you know, Andrew Luck, as great as he's played, some a lot of picks this season. You know, obviously has the looks of an outstanding career, but he's made his fair share of rookie mistakes. He's had just enough opportunities to overcome them. They've won, I think they're 7-1 in games decided by less than a touchdown. Fourth quarter comebacks. I mean, all this kind of stuff that's happened for them. I just don't think that it plays out against an experienced team. And look, the Ravens have not played good football for most of the season. They've gotten by, you know, when you're living on the edge and winning games, you know, when you're facing 4th-and-29, that just doesn't happen very often. Right. Okay. And their defense has been suspect for most of the season, you know, but I think that the experience that they have, getting Ray Lewis back, you know, if Suggs and Nada are at all healthy, you're looking at, you know, a team that probably gets through at least the first game and maybe even can make a run into the AFC Championship game. I think that's a little bit more than the Colts can probably handle at this point in time.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think this has been a wonderful story and a great ride for the Colts, but I think very tough to go into Baltimore in the postseason, no less, and pull out a win. Seahawks, the story with them has been you don't beat the Seahawks in Seattle, but have they gotten to the point where they are a good road team finally, and can they take their act to Washington and pull one off?
I don't know if they're a good road team or not. I know that they beat Buffalo, but they beat Buffalo in Toronto. So does that count as a road victory or not? And especially when, you know, it's a team that's got Dave Wanstead as defensive coordinator. I mean, just not doing a very good job up there, and that's one of the reasons why Chan Gailey and the rest of that coaching staff got cleared out. I mean, I've got some doubt about Seattle going on the road, but the one thing, and we come back to it, is defense at this time of the year, particularly if you can cover and you've got physical corners, and they've got physical corners in Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner, and knowing the way that pass interference gets called or doesn't get called now, I think that gives Seattle defense an extra factor that I'm not sure that Robert Griffin III is going to be ready for. This is, to me, my favorite game because I don't feel comfortable prognosticating this game in any way, shape, or form. I have no idea what's going to happen, which makes the game really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. How's Russell Wilson going to do going basically back home? He's from Richmond, Virginia. How's RG3 going to do in his first game? You've got Kyle and Mike Shanahan going up against Pete Carroll and that defense. You know, you can go on and on, but this is a fantastic game. And yeah, the road issue is a primary one for Seattle, but you counter that with saying Washington, the defense, is not exactly getting it done either. They've had to do a lot of wholesale blitzing here to make things happen at all on defense.
Yeah, that's where the issue is for me. I like Seattle. I really do, and I think they're so physical. The way that defense is hitting, I'm just remembering those shots that they were delivering against the 49ers, and those resonated. And I think Russell Wilson's in a special place the way he's performing. I don't think there's anything fluky at all about his game. And as I look at Washington, and that's the thing, it's really Alfred Morris as much as anything driving that bus, and the Seahawks defense could be capable of not letting him trample them.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a lot of discipline for them, because obviously what RG3 does with all that read option stuff, making the read whether he's going to give the ball to Morris or whether he's going to keep it himself, creates all sorts of havoc for a defense. But this is probably one defense that can handle that and can deliver a knockout blow and at least keep RG3 under control, sort of the way that the Steelers did earlier this season.
Right.
Very disciplined team that kept RG3 under control for most of the game. He came back and had a decent little second half, had a little bit of a rally, but never got into that, never truly got into that game. I kind of anticipate that'll be about the same thing. I would think that the Redskins get to maybe 17 or 20 points, and if Seattle can keep them at 17, maybe 20, they can win this game by a field goal or a touchdown.
He is Jason Cole from YahooSports.com. Jason, going to ask you to stick around for one more segment. We're going to talk about the coaching openings throughout the league and, of course, more importantly, the one that's right here with the Browns. That's coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. You're listening to ESPN 850 WKNR.